Nagel, whenever you're ready.
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Thomas Nagel. I represent the plaintiff and appellant in this case, Laguna Hermosa Corporation. This is a resort operation on Lake Berryessa in Napa County, California. One of the prime issues before this Court is whether or not the term require, as it is contained in public law 96.375, can be applied to a situation where the United States actually retains and uses permanent facilities on a resort after the expiration of the concession agreement.
So how would you have us define require? You're dealing with, you would have it apply when the government is silent. The government says nothing. Right?
That's correct.
Don't you think that's a little inconsistent with the normal definition of it says the U.S., the statute says the U.S. may require. Requiring one's general mind would be that the government has to affirmatively do something in order to satisfy that. Are you saying that the government has to do, by doing nothing, can satisfy the require requirement?
Your Honor, I'm not. I'm saying simply, I'll give an example of it. If the government, on the day before the concession agreement is going to expire, looks over onto the property and says to itself, or maybe to the next concessionaire who's bid on the concessions, I don't want anything over there. And then the next day, when the concession has expired, the government walks onto the property and says, thanks for abandoning all this. Now I can turn it over to, in this case, Pensis, who received the award. And it's no different than actually what they're saying in the Fraser case, which preceded this case, that Fraser was talking about select and pay, and here we're talking about retain and use being the same thing. Because if you don't look at it that way, somebody's getting a windfall. Somebody is getting unjustly enriched at the expense of the concessionaire. Because back in 1980, when the concessionaire people came to Congress, they came to get protection for the facilities that they built at the lake.
I'm just trying to, in your argument, are you kind of drawing a distinction between permanent facilities that are removable and those that are not removable? If something were removable, then I think you'd have less of a concern, right, in terms of what the government's required to do. Is that the nub of it? It's that they're, this is, as a practical matter, facilities that are permanent and not removable. Need for specific attention.
Your Honor, pretty much they are because they're infrastructure that is being used today after the expiration of the concession agreements. For instance, if you went to that resort today to get off a highway to get into the resort, you're going to have to use a road system that is in place to provide water and sewer and sanitary facilities for the public. You're going to have to use the facilities that are there today. And those are the things that were sought protection of back in 1980 when this legislation passed this public law, 96.375.
Isn't this part of the give and take, though, of being a concessionaire?
Yeah,
and knowing that you're going to use this government property and to be able to benefit from the value of that use, you're going to have to build facilities. And then the prospect is you're going to have to either leave them behind or cart them off at some time.
Yeah, that option was available to cart off anything that could be carted off before the expiration. We're getting back to what Judge Post's example, being infrastructure not movable or other categories.
Are you asking for a rule that applies to everything, or are you just asking for infrastructure? What are you asking for?
Just what is being retained and used by the government after the expiration of the concessions. This concession, Laguna Hermosa, expired back in June.
What about you have a trailer? That a trailer that has been taken off its wheels and is put on blocks. And the blocks, and it's tied down to the blocks. So it's a permanent fixture, right? Now that's something you could crank up and put the wheels on, haul it away if you wanted to.
And that was done, Your Honor.
Excuse me?
That was done, Your Honor.
Well, so I'm trying to get a grasp on, you're saying if the government, if something is left there and they use it, well, if you left that trailer there, you didn't take the trailer I'm talking of away. Is the government entitled, after you've left, to either use it itself or let the new concessionaire use it?
No.
Why not?
Because
it was movable. You said you could have moved it.
If I had, my apologies. Yes, of course. Anything that could be moved out of there was and did get moved out of there. And in fact, it was over a period of years.
It's like something you can take a house apart. You can take down a structure. You can crank up a house and put it on wheels and move it.
Correct.
Right. It is difficult to move I suppose you could dig a cistern out of the ground and move. It's very difficult to move a road that's been paved and put down into the dirt. That's for sure.
That's correct.
Is that the only thing you're talking about?
Well, no. In addition to the road, there's retaining walls. There's erosion control systems. There's sanitary sewer systems. There's water purification. There's water, freshwater systems. They're all there to operate the resort for the public. And
now, did you read the government? Government says you could have either removed or destroyed these things if you wanted to. So if you just want to make certain that the government wasn't going to be taking advantage of this, presumably the government wouldn't have minded if you destroyed, chewed up the road. If the government's right, I'm going to ask it, if you have the right to destroy, then you can say, guess what? You say to the government, you want to ask? I mean, do you want to exercise your right to require the road? And say, no, we're not going to do that. And say, well, you know what you're going to get? I'm going to get a bulldozer out there and tear the road up. And so the new concession, they say, well, don't do that.
And?
Do you have the power to destroy if it's your property?
I represent the client at the time, advise them not to commit waste at the expense of the public. So
but,
no,
but
I would
the
not.
Threat, the threat to destroy may well cause the government to say we require you to leave it because the new concessionaire has to have a road, or has to have a cistern, has to have bathrooms. So you just say, well, I'm going to, and you play a game of chicken right down to the hour before it's terminated and you blow up the bathroom.
Well, first of all, there wouldn't be any time to do that in that one day, Your Honor. But basically, this was not built in a day and it wasn't vacated in a day.
You blow a few up. You know, to shot across their bow.
To blow a few up, Your Honor, would take the movement of 500,000 cubic yards of material, which was requested of the government. Would you like us to return this to its original state? And the government said no. You can't.
Counsel, so this takes me back to my initial question to you. As a concessionaire, in order to get full benefit of the value of the concession, you built these facilities. You decided, I want to have a retaining wall, look nice, that'll attract customers. And you did so knowing that at some point you were either going to have to cart it off, destroy it, or leave it behind.
Your Honor, we didn't feel that after the passage of Public Law 96-375. We felt there was protection in there because not only was it built in the 50s, it was continually improved upon it. This wasn't just to look nice for the public. The government required it to be up to date. And so money was spent all the time, every year on it, knowing or thinking that they would be reimbursed for this when the government, when the concessions ended, if they did not get the bid, which they did not get the bid.
Can I just ask you the backstory here? Your client had this concession for 50 years, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there a continually, I mean, did they, what chunks of time were they awarded the concession? Did they have to continuously go back and rebid, or was this something new and different than that?
In fact, the Public Law 96-375 gave extensions up to the year 2008. And they were 10-year extensions, Your Honor, from 1980, basically. And so they were not rebid. No, they gave them that. They gave them that comfort level that they could be there for that particular time.
So that may have been what Judge Rayner referred to as sort of a That may have been what Judge Rayner was referring to in a trade-off in all of these scenarios. And there was a trade-off that was to the advantage of the current concessionaires in the passage of this law, was there not?
As far as rebidding, yes, Your Honor.
Are the terms of your particular contract of record in this case?
I don't know.
There was testimony, for example, about a contract for Markley Cove, which I think is nearby.
Yes, sir.
And I think that, so there's testimony as to that one. I just was curious to know whether your actual contract is in the records and we can see it.
No, there were actually in the Fraser case, there were four different resorts that brought that. Actually, it was a pre-award bid.
I know the case.
Okay. And whether it was in that record, I was not the attorney of record at that time.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is in the Markley Cove contract, the contract says facilities not removed by the concessionaire within 180 days after expiration shall be deemed to have been abandoned by the concessionaire. Now, that's in their contract.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the contracts were different because also I had a client up there at Steel Park, and he had a different contract. And in fact, I think Markley Cove.
In this case, you're not making any tough argument based on the contract, are you?
No.
In fact, going back to the Fraser case, wasn't your property rights or the property rights of your client, weren't they fully litigated in the Fraser case?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because what was not litigated was whether or not the term require could include a selection and pay, which came out of Fraser, to be retention and use by the new concessionaire.
It just seems that you're upset that the government's using the property. Let's say that they weren't using it. Would you be here before us?
If there was no one using it, I could not be here before. I'm here before you to say that the government is using and requiring that property. Not that it's going fallow.
Wasn't that issue litigated and before the Fraser court?
It was not litigated, Your Honor. What happened in Fraser, it stopped short of that, but they did define rights of what the United States still had its option by the selected payments.
Right, that's what I mean. So the rights as a concessionaire to ownership of the facilities, that was at issue before the Fraser court.
It wasn't decided. The timing of it was not decided. It was not decided that at the end of the concession, the property immediately reverted to the United States or became abandoned at that time. There was no timing in the statute.
So the timing is different here because you're here before us as a ex-concessionaire. In Fraser, you were a concessionaire. But yet the legal issues, I'm talking about just the legal issues, those were litigated, or there were before the Fraser court.
There were some, but there were the fact that retention and use was not decided in Fraser. It wasn't before the court in Fraser. It was Judge Bush heard this. She also heard Fraser, but it was this case that.
Well, isn't your argument that that issue simply wasn't ripe because it hadn't happened yet?
Well, it's true it wasn't right at that, but
it would have been an advisory opinion if it had been issued because it was issued on a set of facts that hadn't happened. I mean, if that issue had actually been adjudicated, Virgil, they would have said, well, if and when the concession comes to an end, and if and when the government doesn't require you to leave them there, then.
You're banned. But that's not what the decision said. I agree with you.
You want to reserve the balance of your time?
Thank you.
Mr. McFadden.
Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Lane McFadden for the United States. Laguna Hermosa knew, as it invested in these permanent facilities on Bureau of Reclamation.
Statutory interpretation case, right?
Yes.
And we have a situation, we even have a concession from the government in an earlier oral argument, which I realize isn't binding, but in an earlier argument, the government recognized that there was a peculiar problem with these roads, real permanent fixtures, right? What's wrong with an interpretation of this statute that says, with respect to infrastructure, permanent structures, roads, sewers, this sort of thing, that are really not movable? They're destroyable, but they're not movable. That there is an implied requirement that they remain simply because they're there, if they're being used. of the concession.
That interpretation
I'm going to separate the notion of something that's actually removable. You know, if it's removable, then tough luck. If you didn't remove it, you abandon it. But as a matter of statutory interpretation, what's wrong with what I propose?
There are a number of problems with that, Your Honor. One is that the statute states it discusses permanent facilities, making no distinction between those that are removable and non-removable. And as a factual matter, they are all removable, as Your Honor noted.
But the word permanent, if you read our patent cases, you'll know is ambiguous. Because we don't know what is permanent. Is something bolted down permanent? Maybe not. Something cemented down, yes. So there's room for interpretation of what a permanent structure is.
Well, we don't challenge in this
gloss
case.
It exactly the same way. It's permanent if you can't remove it.
So let me highlight a different problem with the interpretation. The court's prior opinion in Frazier, which was affirmed by this court, sort of describes the world of possibilities. They can take it with them, or they can leave it behind once their contract expires. Then there is a third option, which is when they try to take it with them or state their intention to take it with them, and the government requires them to leave it there. At that point, compensation is due. All of this presumes that this is happening at a time when they could remove the permanent facilities, which could only be during the time when they have a contractual right to enter onto the property.
Can I just step back a minute just to make sure I understand what's going on here? If it's a permanent facility of the one of the kinds that Judge Clevenger was referring to, in other words, it's a road. I mean, it's of no value to move it. It's just disruptive, whatever. What scenario is there in which the government would require that they stay there and therefore have to shell out money as opposed to never requiring under your definition of requiring? Why would the government ever choose to pay the concessionaire when he knows there's no way the concessionaire can get this stuff out anyway?
Well, maybe that's possible with roads. I have to say that in this case, the government did ask them to remove the roads. And in fact, the only part of the property that is now publicly accessible is accessible on a part of road
that was laid by someone else.
So
the government did require them, ask them to remove the roads. How were they to remove a road?
They were to break it up and put it in the back of a dump truck and haul it out, just as the government did at government expense after the contract expired. I mean, I don't want to get too far outside of the facts as pled in the complaint because those control this court's opinion in this case. But I do want to let the court know that what actually happened
well,
after the contract
fact of
expired.
Record?
This is not in the record because
well,
no facts were developed.
But my hypothetical went to when the government wants the road. If the government wants to keep the road and they feel like it will be useful and it will save them in the long run.
Then the government can send a letter that says, do not destroy the road in the process of removing things attached to it.
And that satisfies the may require, and then the government's going to have to pay up. But if
right.
it's something like a road that the concessionaire is never going to be able to use again and is of really no value when taken apart to the concessionaire, doesn't the government realize that and say, well, if we acquire him, we're going to have to pay for it. If we just say nothing, then he's going to have to leave the road anyway because he doesn't really have a choice. And so why would the government, as a prudent consumer, which we all know it is, why would the government ever require the removal of something such as a road?
Well, for the practical reason I stated, in the process of removing other pieces of the property and other parts of permanent facilities, those roads might very well be rendered unusable or expensive repairs might be necessary. They might drive heavy equipment
just
in as they're moving out.
Don't fight the resigners. Take a facility that's working perfectly, water purification system or something, the toilet, the sanitary stuff is working just beautifully, right? And it is something that you know that the concessionaire is not going to remove. It has no purpose to remove. So why on earth would the government ever say, please leave that there. I want you to leave the plumbing facilities in place.
Your Honor, this concern that the government might gain a windfall, I mean, they would say that in the instance they want it left in place because they would want it left in place intact and in good working order.
They don't want to pay for it.
They don't want the wires removed. They don't want the
brand new bathrooms. The concessionaire was dumb enough to put a $5 million set of bathrooms at the dock. In the last year of the concession is fabulous. In fact, the new concessionaire is going to pay more to the government for the concession because of the bathrooms. Everybody on the lake wants to use those bathrooms. Why on earth would the government require Laguna Hermosa to leave those bathrooms there?
To protect it from being partially dismantled. Your Honor, respectfully, they very well might. And in the instance that they don't, I think it's a mistake to characterize this as the government attempting to game a windfall. That concern was addressed by Congress in 1980, where Congress enacted the statute to prevent the Bureau of Reclamation from terminating these contracts early and kicking them out and keeping their property.
Have you conceded in your brief, and maybe you'll try to take it back, that the landowner can destroy this bathroom I just talked about if he wants to?
I can see that now as well, yes.
So isn't your ruling just going to lead to a very unfortunate set of circumstances in the concession where the concessionaire is going to go out with the jackhammer a couple of months before the concession is over? They know they've lost. Somebody else is going to say, you know, unless you tell me that you want me to leave these toilets here, we're going to start tearing them down. And the government's thinking, oh, my God, the new guy that's bidding on them is bidding because he wants the toilets. And if this incumbent guy wrecks the toilets down, we're going to have to build the toilets or something. So you don't want him to jackhammer the toilets. He has to jackhammer up a few of them to get you to come to the bargaining table. And you come down to the bargaining table because if he jackhammers them all up and just leaves the trash there, you're going to have a real problem.
Your Honor, the reason that...
Isn't that what your rule is going to drive practical business people to?
It could drive practical business people to it. The reason it will not is because the statute addresses these specific contracts at Lake Berryessa only, and these contracts were rebid precisly because the government wanted
like
all of this.
Just like three or four, there's never happened anyplace else in the world because these are the only contracts that are involved.
Yeah, the statute is specific to Lake Berryessa and these properties. And more to the point, it was enacted in the context of the government trying to evict these resorts and get rid of all of these permanent facilities. The government routinely told Laguna Hermosa to remove all of these permanent facilities before its contract expired.
Why would it do that? They're not usable or?
They're not up to code. They were put up sort of an ad hoc basis. A lot of the erosion control systems
he's
talking about are.
That brings me to my next question. They required them to remove them. Then why is the government using them now?
The government, Your Honor, is not using them now. And that is simply inaccurate factual statement in the complaint. We accept it for purposes of the complaint because the case is before you on a motion to dismiss.
You didn't deny that in your answer, did you?
No, Your Honor. We filed a motion to dismiss on the pleadings in response to the complaint.
But you didn't deny it in your complaint. I mean, in your answer.
I don't believe we filed an answer, Your Honor.
But if that's the case, you'd win anyway, right? I mean, even if this case went forward, what you're suggesting is there's no damages. You haven't used them, so there's no current value. There's no market value to the facility.
Oh, that's absolutely right. I mean, we would on a hearing on damages, we would certainly win. But the question before you is whether they've actually pled any action by the government that could conceivably have required them to leave their permanent facilities behind, and they haven't. We couldn't take any such action after Frazier, after their contract expired, because they couldn't have removed those facilities. They didn't have the contractual right to enter onto the property, and they never pled that they had said they wanted to remove them, that they were removing them. All of this is missing from the complaint. What they have to plead is, we intended to remove these permanent facilities, and the government did something that prevented us from doing that.
Can you address the issue of issue preclusion?
Yes, Your Honor. The claim, as I just described to you, arises out of Frazier, and what Frazier addressed in the context of four different concessionaires, then current concessionaires presenting a bid protest, was what the world of their property rights was as expanded by public law.
But did the court in Frazier find that Laguna had abandoned the property in question? It did not.
It did not, no.
And so isn't the abandonment issue that was not decided in Frazier appropriately not thrown out here on the question of issue preclusion?
Well, the Court of Federal Claims here read its own previous decision to mean that abandonment occurs at the point where your contract expires and you have left permanent facilities behind.
That issue was not resolved in the issue. That's an issue of this court and that's in this case, right?
Well, Your Honor reads Frazier that way, yes.
Yes, I agree with you.
I'm agreeing with you in the alternative. I still maintain that that is precluded by Frazier, that Frazier says abandonment occurs.
Did Hermosa have a chance, free and fair chance to litigate that issue in the previous case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Really? Because there had been no amendment.
There had been.
It hadn't happened.
They did not have a full and fair chance to litigate the question of whether they were going to.
It would have been an advisory opinion. If the judge had said in that case, and by the way, when the contract comes to an end, right, when it comes to an end, then you're abandoned.
Well,
that's a future act.
The court didn't have to make that statement because it made the broader statement that when the contract comes to an end and the government has not at that date required you to retain your facilities, you no longer have any residual right to compensation, which is then the question raised by this point. Then they can have come back to this court now to say that events occurring after that date might entitle us to compensation under some interpretation of the statute. But that is completely foreclosed by the prior opinion in Fraser. They have no residual property interest in these roads, in some buried sewage line, in the sewage treatment ponds that the government has had to remediate. They no longer own those properties. Public law 96-375 was passed against a background of well-established law that says that ownership of improvements passes with title to the land. And Congress said, well, we'll provide some additional protection in the event that the government wants to keep properties that you might want to remove, your own compensation. And otherwise, while you're the current concessionaire, this is your property. We make that clear.
Is this a private lease, though, or is this just a part of a broader statute?
It's part of a broader statute, and it's one in a series of statutes addressing this particular area and this particular reclamation property, which had since 1959 been held to be used in violation of the Bureau of Reclamation's public use plan for the area. But it took...
Water reclamation series of acts, wasn't it?
That's right. That's right, Your Honor.
And this is sort of the tail wagging the old.
And as Your Honor's pointed out, part of the additional protection that was given these property owners in 1980 was that they got two 10-year extensions on their contracts to get the full value and additional value from these permanent facility investments that they made as a business investment in their contract, which has always had an expiration date, and even 20 years past its original expiration date. That date has never been a surprise to Laguna Hermosa or any of the other concessionaires.
What do you do with a situation that hasn't been decorated by the facts outside the record that you have decorated the tree with? What do you do with a situation where there's a road that is the only way to get off highway so-and-so to get down to the facility, and the road is in fine shape, and the new concessionaire has said to the government, I want to use that road, and the government says, well, we think it's a good idea for you to use that road, and the government says, well, we're not going to tell the outgoing concessionaire that we require them to leave the road here.
Your Honor, the government wouldn't do that because
well, that's
it would
the
be
case
part of
we
the
have.
Bid.
Excuse me, I've stripped off the Christmas tree, all this ex record stuff that you fed in here to prejudice my mind. I'm trying to get back to the cases in front of us. All this talk you gave us about how the government said, you know, tear it up, get rid of it, we don't want it, that's not in the record, right?
Right.
Right, and that's poison. I didn't want to know that.
I apologize.
I want to know the answer to the hard case, which is the one in front of us, which is the plaintiff says there's a road here, right? And the plaintiff says the government has said I'm going to use the road, or the concessionaire is going to use the road. That allegation was not denied. That's the case in front of us.
That case, Your Honor, we don't believe is hard because in the normal event, that road would own.
It comes back to the statutory interpretation.
Right.
I was suggesting that we might say, in a circumstance such as that, we might say, well, a permanent facility, that's a hard thing to decide what it is. And we just say, well, if it's a situation where the stuff is removable, then either remove it or abandon it. But if it isn't removable in a real world sense, and if the government's going to use it, pay. And I propose that as an interpretation of the statute. I didn't get any answer out of it, except, well, you don't have to worry about it, Judge Clevenger, because that's not the facts of this case.
May I offer a statute-based response to Your Honor's question?
Yes, sir.
The statute does not provide a right to compensation for use by the government. It provides a right to compensation when the government requires that the facilities not be removed. That is the action that must be pled, and that action is not pled. There is nothing in the complaint that says that the government took any action, made any statement that required them not to remove any permanent facility, road, or otherwise.
Your adversary's argument is that silence plus use is equivalent to requirement. And why can't we interpret the statute that way?
Because that is not consistent with the definition of require that they put forward, or the court's definition in Frazier.
The intent was to have some compensation. There's no question about that from the statute. So I go back then to the presiding judge's argument, and I say, well, in a case where the facilities are permanent, they can't be removed, and the government wants them to be used by itself or by the next concessionaire, the government will never, I mean, I hope the government will never say we require them to stay, because it's Clevenger's money they're going to be spending. They get free infrastructure by keeping their mouth shut. So when you say that can happen under the statute, clearly, and you had no response to the presiding judges other than the fact, yep, that can happen, and you say, well, knowing that, we can construe this statute to say if the facilities are permanent and the government wants to use them and does use them, they have required them to be stored.
Your Honor, that extends the text of the statute past what it provides compensation for. I think it's inconsistent with the prior decision in Frazier. It provides compensation for any benefit the government might get, which is not how the statute is drafted or what it was intended to do.
What do you mean, any benefits?
You're just suggesting that because the government might drive on the roads after they leave, they would be entitled to compensation under the public law.
Practical. We're talking about leaving the road in place as ingress and egress for the use by the new concessionaire, whether it be the government itself or somebody under contract.
But let me add to Judge Clevenger's scenario, because I read this statute maybe in a different fashion and consistent to what he's asking. And that is, there's two ways that the government has to, or rather that the concessionaire gets compensation. One is if the government requires that the permanent facilities not be removed, and then they pay for fair value. You agree with that?
Yes.
Then the statute goes on and says, or different scenario now, or if a new concessionaire assumes operation of the concession, they require that the new concessionaire pay fair value for the permanent facilities to the existing concessionaire. So if you have a new concessionaire that steps in, then the government requires that concessionaire to pay fair value.
Your Honor, that argument hasn't been made.
No, but the argument on the interpretation of the statute has been brought up. I'm looking at this, and in this situation, and fitting with Judge Clevenger's line of questioning, you have a road, you have a new concessionaire in the property, correct?
In theory, yes. There's nothing built there.
No, but there's a new concessionaire. And that concessionaire, in theory, is going to utilize or enjoy the retaining walls. There's docks out there. There's a marina. There's slips. There's sewers. I mean, if the new concessionaire steps in, doesn't the statute say that the government should require that the old concessionaire get compensation for that?
We have read it to be that the or means that compensation will be provided by the concessionaire or by the government, not that these are two wholly separate factual scenarios in which the statute provides compensation. But I want to reiterate that they're relying only on the first half of that provision.
We're trying to figure out how the statute works. How does the statute work if you've got this permanent facility that wasn't taken away and is very useful, and the government is going to require that it not be removed, okay? But the new concessionaire is coming in, and they say we want to require the concessionaire wants to use it. So at that stage in the game, the concessionaire is out of pocket, not the government, right?
The new concession.
The new concession.
Yes.
Yeah. And so the government, if indeed in your fact situation it is some type of a permanent facility that the new concessionaire is going to use, then it doesn't cost the government anything to require the way your adversaries like to read it, because the new concessionaire will pay for it.
That's right. I don't want to suggest that that means that some injustice has been done or that there's been some gamesmanship here. The new concessionaire, if the new concessionaire were to use those facilities, that would be part of the new concessionaire's bid. That would be part of the conceptual plans they would submit to the government prior to awarding it. All of this would have occurred long before the new concessionaire stepped onto the property. There would be no way to keep secret the desire of the new concessionaire to use any of these permanent facilities, because that desire would have to be incorporated in its bid.
Well, but the new concessionaire is in a position to feather the government's nest with a higher price than it would otherwise pay if it isn't forced to pay for the infrastructure.
But that's even more true for the current concessionaire, which could bid to get a new concession and continue to use the permanent facilities on that property, which it had invested and it could probably presumably make best use of as it had designed them. I mean, I don't know why this would inure specifically to the benefit of someone new coming into the property, more so than to the concessionaire that's already there and has a chance to bid on a new contract when its current contract expires.
I think we've gone substantially over in light of the number of questions, but thank you for your argument. We'll turn back to Mr. Nagel, and we'll give you an additional 4 minutes if you need it, in addition to the 2 minutes you reserve.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't think I'll need that. With permission of the court, I would like to read from the oral argument in Fraser when Judge Clevenger pointed out there was
is this something in the record, or that you're, is this in the appendix or not?
Yeah, it is, Your Honor. It's a Joint Appendix 34. Thank you. Quote, and when you turn to the larger question, Your Honor, obviously if the roads are going to be used, if this is an area where the government believes that this natural land should have roads, then they'll be paid. There will be compensation for it. They'll want the roads there. If it's a situation where the government has decided that the area should no longer have a road on it and should no longer have that kind of infrastructure there, then indeed there is no compensation for that property. And also, Your Honor, I filed a motion to augment our joint appendix, and there's on page 33, which is the new page 33, I motioned the court to read. There was a definition, Your Honor, by the United States about what a permanent facility was, and that is on page 33. If I could read that. Quote, and that specific definition is, quote, permanent facilities are defined as fixed assets, which are any structure, comma, fixture, comma, or capital improvements permanently attached to the federal estate. And I suggest in closing, Your Honor, that if in fact the U.S. would exercise this option to require not to move anything on the property, it would do so only because they intend to use it. And here, just by saying nothing, they still intend to and have retained and are using. And I thank you, Judge Clevenger, for not going into the facts. I'm not going to rebut any facts. Here, I'm assuming that the pleading is taken as true and correct. And I would like to thank this court and wish you a happy holidays.
Thank you. Case is submitted.